It's time to Fade the Chalk.
Fade the Chalk.
Presented by the FTN Network, helping you win your fantasy leagues and dominate in DFS. And now, here are your hosts, Derek Brown and Adam Pfeiffer.
What is up? Welcome into the Fade the Chalk podcast, brought to you by the FTN Network. I am your host, Ebro, joined at the hip, as always, by my co-host, Adam Pfeiffer. Update on FTN, the paywall has gone up on FadeTheNoise.com. You can go check out the mountain of content we have up on the site right now. And on today's show, we're going to preview the quarterback position. And we have a guest. The first guest of the show, we had to bring in one of our FTN brothers, Anthony Amico. You can follow him on Twitter at Amixa, the number one quarterback ranker in Fantasy Pros accuracy competition from 2019. He is a quarterback hoarder and connoisseur in Superflex. Anthony, what is going on, man?
What's up, Derek? Nice you guys to give me the nice intro there. I mean, that was pretty flattering, but definitely happy to be teammates with you guys on the site and happy to be here today. So thanks.
Absolutely, dude. Like, when we were thinking about who we had to get into this to talk about quarterbacks, you were top of the list, number one. Give everybody, the listeners, an idea of all the fantastic work, what you're currently working on for FTN right now.
I mean, there's a bunch of stuff out right now. I mean, I just dropped a piece today on breakout wide receivers. So we got breakout receivers, and there's breakout tight ends out there, a bunch of best ball stuff, a couple betting articles. So we're kind of running the gamut right now. You know, I think we have like well over 100 pieces since launch, and you know, all things are good, I think. It's all systems go right now at FTN.
Heck yeah, man. We are firing off content daily. Adam, you're behind the curtain right now. How you doing, man?
Yeah, just in case anybody was wondering, I did beat Amico and Madden before we got on this podcast in overtime. So the good news is I did it with Deshaun Watson, who I'm sure we'll talk about today on the quarterback preview. But no, yeah, Amico's been my dude for a while. Glad to have him on. He's the first guest. And yeah, you mentioned that quarterback, number one quarterback ranker in Fantasy Pros accuracy competition. Kind of talked to you before we got on, but it was like, was there anybody that kind of stood out at the position that you ranked either higher or lower than everybody else to kind of help you with that? Because I feel like there was a handful of guys last year that were just either way better than expectation or way worse.
Yeah, I think that the two guys that likely boosted my accuracy the most were probably Lamar and Baker on opposite ends of the spectrum, because I had Lamar, I'm pretty sure, at three last year, and you know, obviously he finished at one, but I don't think a lot of people had him that high. And then with Baker, I had him down in like the teens, and I think a lot of folks probably had him as like a QB1, mid QB1. So those things definitely helped. It feels good getting some recognition for the process. I was number one in 2017 as well, so I'm feeling pretty good about the quarterback stuff. It's just all the other – now I got to get all the other stuff right, you know.
Well, and that's exactly what we had to have you on, man. So let's dive into these quarterbacks. Just from a high-level perspective, Anthony, how do you approach the quarterback position and kind of go through a little bit of how that changes or what that looks like, one quarterback versus super flex drafts?
Yes, I think historically I've been mostly a late-round quarterback kind of guy, just in terms of how I've always played fantasy football, but definitely started to give a little more preference towards like mid-round QBs in the last couple years, just because I feel like, at least for me, I play a lot of best ball, so I like having, you know, quarterbacks who have upside. I'm not really going to be able to stream as much. I'm not going to be able to stream at all in a best ball format, so, you know, rather than have like, you know, two low-level guys that maybe piece together a decent season, I certainly want to have some upside. I just don't want to pay absolute top dollar. So, like, the third, fourth, fifth round kind of guys, like, I'm never really going to draft them. In two quarterback or super flex, I've been way more aggressive this year trying to get at least one stud quarterback.
You could definitely say that.
You got to get the QBs, man. I mean, the thing is that, like, the top guys just have so much more upside than the rest of the field, because now they're basically all guys who can run and throw.
Right.
So if you get the right season, they aren't just like weekly winners. Like, they just they dominate.
And I wrote about it in the quarterback rushing article I did for FTN when we launched, that like, it's not even just the dudes that will give you like the 34, like you really want to find those guys that can at least get you like 30 rushing yards. I feel like that's the mark. But then it's guys who, like, if they don't get you the rushing yards, like Dak Prescott, like dude has like 30% of their carries from inside the five last year. Like, he was literally getting play calls designed for him. Same with Josh Allen. Like, so those dudes, like, yeah, you're not going to project rushing touchdowns for quarterbacks, but for some guys, you can expect them to get, you know, the additional four or five rushing touchdowns on top of, you know, that benchmark of yardage. So, and you had what, Dak and Deshaun Watson in one of the mocks we did for Superflex?
Yeah, that was the one that Derek wrote up.
Which is dope.
Watson round one, Dak round two, and it's just, I mean, you just never have to worry about quarterback. Like, that's just a great feeling in Superflex.
Yeah.
So to dive into that a little bit more, so I mean, you're saying you're more aggressive in Superflex. I think Adam kind of leans more towards, my usual sweet spot is somewhere, depending on format, how many players you got to start, like running back, wide receiver wise. My usual sweet spot in Superflex is like, I'll double tap quarterbacks like between rounds 6 and 8, 5 and 8, somewhere in there. But I mean, the way you're laying it out, when are you looking for taking your quarterbacks? Is it always round 1, 2, or is it a little bit later depending?
If I'm in the back of the first round, I'm going to be trying to do that a lot probably this year. I just, my general philosophy on quarterbacks and super flex is that because the position has so much more value, there's inevitably going to be a QB run somewhere.
That's what I think is huge with Superflex, is understanding when the runs are coming and when there's drop-offs in positions. Because I used to be a guy that, like, I want to get, like, at least in my rankings, like a top 7 or 6 guy at the quarterback position. But in a lot of these drafts we've done, I've missed on that. So I just kind of, you know, where everybody else zigs, I'll zag and just get a bunch of stud receivers and running backs. And then hopefully Gardner Minshew and, like, Ben Roethlisberger are good enough to have it as a quarterback pairing.
Yes, and, like, I think in Superflex in particular, quarterback ADP just has so much variance to it, like more than any other position. But the place where it's going to be the most stable is those first couple rounds. So, like, if you take Deshaun Watson in round one, like, there's not really going to be a ton of variance around where he's going to end up. But that next tier guys, or maybe even, like, tier 3 or 4, like, they could run off the board in round 3. They could run off the board in round 5. And, you know, I think you stand to lose a lot of value if you wait, and then you end up kind of feeling like your hand is forced to take a guy like too soon later on. So I feel like if I get him early, then I end up just kind of scooping up value throughout the draft. Whereas when I'm waiting, I feel like I inevitably have to like pass on a good player because I need to take, like, you know, Nick Foles or, you know, someone that's like not even necessarily a very good quarterback, but I just need someone to start.
The game of chicken in Superflex, it's like, when are you going to take quarterbacks? Where do you target them at? And that's really, because I mean, that's really the big variation in the format versus any other draft we're talking about in fantasy and stuff. So with all of that, if you're taking your quarterbacks, your top two guys that early, when are you targeting your QB3? Is it usually kind of plugging again the mock that we did? Is it usually in that round 7, 8-ish area, or does it kind of depend?
Probably depends. Like in Scott Fishbowl, I didn't even draft a third quarterback because I just know I'm never going to use him. It kind of depends. You know, I think it really depends for me. I don't think that having a third quarterback is mega important in a format like Scott Fishbowl, where like that third quarterback is probably just not good anyway, and you're just better off starting a skill player. In like the mock that we did, where I started out early and I grabbed obviously the two studs early, it's still, I think, kind of hard to, you know, then spend, you know, a relatively premium pick on a quarterback. I think I took Jimmy Garoppolo in round 10 in that one, and I thought that was reasonable, just because he was like QB 24 or something like that. I thought it was a good price. But I don't really want to take another quarterback in like those single-digit rounds, I don't think, because, you know, obviously if you take quarterbacks early, you're catching up on some of these skill positions.
Well, it's also worth noting, and I highlighted this in the Superflex mock that we did, that even if you walk out of a draft with only two quarterbacks, that's really not a time to panic anyway. Like, over the last 3 years, we've seen on average 45 quarterbacks over the span of the season will start at least 3 games over the last 3 years. So in some way, shape, form, or fashion, even if you're like, I gotta play a quarterback in that other spot when bye weeks hit, you're most likely gonna find somebody because of injuries, because guys get benched, what have you, that random guys like the Jeff Driscolls of the world and the David Blows, like these random guys that can have weeks, will show up in the middle of the season. It just, like, you don't have to walk out of the draft with the QB3. If you're talking about, like, what Anthony's saying here, you're like, screw it, I'm not going to pay the single-digit price on getting a guy that's going to be on my bench most likely for most of the fantasy season. It's absolutely a way to attack it as well, to be like, look, I'm just not going to do that. I'm going to get a position player, and when that happens, or when I get to bye weeks, then I'll figure it out, because it's going to present itself. Like, historically, it's shown it over the last 3 years that, like, that's going to happen.
Do you know how many different quarterbacks started last year alone? Like, I don't know the answer. I'm legitimately asking you, because you brought up the Lions. They had Driscoll, they had David Blough, then, like, the Steelers had Big Ben, Rudolph, and Hodges. I feel like there was a lot last year.
Well, even the quarterback position, even if they suck, they're usually going to give you, like, what, 10, maybe 12
points?
Yeah,
like 12, I feel like.
That's what you're going to get on a lot of different positional players that, at least, unless you're chasing, like, upside and ceiling in that spot for the week, that's probably what you're going to be looking for getting out of that. But I've got to get your take here, Anthony. Who is your QB1? Because there's been a lot of talk on Twitter about, and I don't think that anybody's definitively wrong or what have you on this one, but Patrick Mahomes versus Lamar Jackson, who's your guy this year for number one?
Yeah, I mean, I think that these guys are just so close that it probably depends on the scoring system. If you're playing in 6 point per touchdown pass or any format like Scott Fishbowl that's going to award points for completions and avoiding sacks and stuff like that, it's Mahomes. And then almost every other format, it's Lamar Jackson. The rushing is just way too big, I think, to ignore 1,200 yards last year in just 15 games. So even if you think he runs less in 2020, and I'm honestly not even sure why you would think that that's the case, because he's still really young and still very effective in that role, he's going to get you north of 100 fantasy points as a runner pretty easily. And I think that that floor, that locks him into like a really safe floor, but it also, I think, gives him an excellent ceiling, which we saw last year. I know last year he hit the outlier touchdown passing season, but even without that, he was going to kind of lap the field at the position because, you know, he's getting you that consistent rushing production every week.
Yeah, and I feel like we talked about this the other day, Debra, where, like, his rushing touchdowns could go up. Like, I know Mark Ingram was really good in the touchdown department too, but, like, even if his passing, like, his touchdown rate is obviously historic, it's going to come down, but if that kind of balances out and he runs for more touchdowns too, it's just, it's ridiculous how far away ahead of the pack these two are.
People will point to, and I'm with you, I think Lamar Jackson is my one as well, and people will point to, like, well, what if Mahomes rushes more, what have you. Like, this needs to actually be talked about too. Like, the rushing that Lamar Jackson has is ridiculous, and I'm with you on that. I don't think that that goes away. Plus, if we're talking about more positive variance as far as his touchdowns go up in the rushing department, like, Lamar Jackson last year averaged 27.7 fantasy points per game. Even if you look at Mahomes, and we're talking about just ridiculous Everest size ceiling, 2018, even in that year, he threw freaking 50 touchdowns. He was at 26 points. He still wasn't even what Lamar was last year. And if Lamar gathers more, even, like, we know that the passing touchdowns are going to come down. Like, that, there's no way he's going to replicate, what, 9% TD rate?
Yeah, it was just over 9%. Just stupid.
But if he bumps it up, because he only scored 7 scores on the ground last year, if that goes into the double digits, then he's padding that floor, or he's just replacing the equity in a different form. So I'm with you. Jackson's my one for this year. Moving over to tier two, so looking at, like, Dak, Russ, Deshaun Watson, like we've already discussed, and Kyler, who's your favorite here, Anthony?
So my favorite here is Watson, but I actually think that he belongs in tier one. I don't
really
think that he's a tier two player. Yeah, I have him right now projected for exactly like 2 points more than Mahomes, actually.
Wow.
Wow.
I love it. Yeah. It's so spicy. It's not, I mean, it's not even spicy because Watson's just such a freaking good player, but everybody's jumping ship because Hopkins isn't there. And if you listen to this podcast, like, We're not going to bring up Will Fuller because I think Debro's going to have a heart attack. But I've been on the please let me get Watson as he falls as much as I possibly can.
Yeah, I mean, he hasn't – like the big thing with Watson is he hasn't had that outlier touchdown rate season yet. I mean, if he did technically, I guess, as a rookie, but he got hurt like halfway through the year. Like, but that would have been his monster year. But if you just like strip the touchdowns away and you look at kind of what those three quarterbacks have done, Watson is right there. I mean, if anything, you should be arguing that Lamar is in a tier by himself, and then Mahomes and Watson are kind of in that next group, because you just look at the last 2 years and you take only the games that they played minimum 30 snaps. So like, you know, you're not counting the games where Lamar just like came in and carried the ball five times for Flacco. You're not counting the games that Mahomes left early. But if you just look at the point production, just in terms of yards, Lamar, 15.7 points per game, 0.4 per opportunity, so just a pass or a rush attempt. That's like way better than the next group. So Mahomes, 14.3 and 0.35. And then Watson, 13.8, also 0.35 per opportunity. So like, you know, Watson and Mahomes, like per attempt, are basically the same quarterback. And the thing that has really differentiated widely from them is the touchdowns and the scoring. But there's really no reason that Watson can't also have that kind of, you know, big scoring season. You know, he's part of an offense that's probably going to run more plays than Kansas City this year. And I just think, like, overall, in terms of his talent, like he's still right there with those guys. Like, he's still one of the best young quarterbacks in football.
I think there's three quarterbacks in the NFL that can realistically reach 10 rushing touchdowns. It's Lamar Jackson, Josh Allen, and Deshaun Watson. Because they don't score rushing touchdowns in Houston. David Johnson's there. I still don't think that, like, their MO is going to be, you know, quarterback draws. They're just so tough to stop. And I think this is going to be like an MVP type season for Deshaun Watson, where he just says, all right, you know, get on my back. I'm going to carry us. Yes, they lost DeAndre Hopkins, but people that are saying that's such a huge, like, it's obviously a downgrade. He's arguably the best receiver in the NFL, but it's not like they just lost him. They brought in Brandon Cooks, who's been really good when he's been healthy. Mm-hmm. And then they also add Randall Cobb, who's more than serviceable. David Johnson, for as underwhelming as he's been as a rusher, has been really efficient as a receiver. I think he was like over 10 yards a target. So with all those field stretchers too, Will Fuller, Kenny Stills, Brandon Cooks, I think if you're playing man against this team, Deshaun Watson's just going to take off and rip off like 15, 20 yard runs. Like, I think he's going to run more than he ever has this year. Plus that secondary, like, that defense still has holes. So I originally was like a little bit skeptic on him, and then I was like, wait, this is going to set up actually pretty nice for him for fantasy. So I'm like, I think drafting Kyler over him is a really, really big mistake. Not that Kyler's bad. I just think Watson's he's just really good. Like, it's that simple. It's really good.
No, yeah. I get what people see in Kyler, because, I mean, I think he's great as a prospect, as a player, or whatever. But, you know, he's my, like, QB6 projected right now. Like, he's not in this group.
I think that's where I have him, too. They went really run heavy once Kenny and Drake was kind of catching on in the back end of the season. They went super run heavy. Nobody talks about it, but they did.
Yeah, and I think part of that's probably the O-line, stuff like that. Like, I baked into my projection that I think they're going to throw more and play a little faster. The thing is that, like, it's just really difficult to do what some of these other guys do. Like, you know, for Kyler to be in that group, he would have to be insanely efficient, and it is really difficult to get that kind of efficiency in that air raid attack because it's so horizontal. You know, and like you were mentioning with Watson, he's really a guy who likes to push the ball vertically down the field. So like, having Fuller is obviously excellent. We've seen that in his career, but I think the Cooks addition has not probably been talked about enough, because if he's anything like he has been for most of his career, like, he's pretty much an elite receiver. And, you know, he's obviously excellent at what he does in terms of getting down the field. So, I'm definitely in on that.
People want to jump on the train and talk about how bad Bill O'Brien is. And I'm not saying he's good, but if just looking at these weapons, and I know he lost Hopkins, that's been just beat down and everybody's talked about that. But the other weapons in this offense, can we not say that, like, he's gotten an upgrade in some aspects? Like, Kiki Kuti has been on the field, off the field, effectiveness, what have you. But Randall Cobb is as good, if not better, and he's a more stable option.
He's an upgrade. Watson. Bill O'Brien, like Kiki Cutie, was like the Ronald Jones at receiver. Like he got pulled from so many games last year.
Well, and then you have what Cook is going to replace what they wanted out of Kenny Stills. If Fuller can step into a bigger role this year, we've seen him be ultra efficient and a massive playmaker. David Johnson's also something they didn't have in the pass game last year. He's a definitive upgrade over Carlos Hyde. I think if you put all the different pieces together, this is an offense that the sum of its parts is better than what they had last year, outside of just DeAndre Hopkins. But people are going to want to know, like, and I've got to get your take a little bit more in depth on Watson there, Anthony. Like, what do you see, like, I understand, like, touchdown variance and things of that nature, but, like, how does Watson get there? Is it just, does he spread it out? Do you see one of the weapons kind of elevating, or does he do it based off of rushing? Like, the way you have him projected out right now, like, what does that really look like?
Well, he's playing with two extremely high efficiency, you know, extremely efficient wide receivers. So, like, Fuller and Cooks kind of boost him up. So even though he loses Hopkins, you know, it's kind of making up for that in the efficiency bump that he's going to get. And I think Fuller is the more important player just for kind of how he plays. And like the stuff that he does on the ground, the thing that's really nice about Watson is like you can basically lock in like upper 400s, 500 rushing yards.
Yeah.
And like Adam said, like he always finds his way into the end zone. So like that is something that these other guys don't really have. I mean, obviously Lamar has it, but I'm just saying if you're looking at the other guys going at the top, like Kyler doesn't really have the same touchdown floor, I don't think, that Watson does, and doesn't really run. It didn't really run as much last year.
I think Watson's rushing for 500 yards this year.
Yeah, I haven't projected 522 and 6 touchdowns rushing. So like that's just like a huge
that's a huge bump. Yeah. I love Watson, man. I might move him like higher just after talking to you because I think Dak is probably the consensus QB3 for a lot of people, and I have no problem with it, but right. Dak scored a ton of passing yards last year because they went so pass-heavy in certain games, too. Like, they were playing from behind a lot, and now, like, his efficiency might be higher, but I expect the touchdowns and the yardage to come down a little bit. Like, he's not throwing for 4,900 yards again, and, like, again, I just think we could see, like, maybe not Cam level in 2015 from Deshaun Watson, but, like, kind of close to it. And clearly the weapons are way better than what Cam had that year. He's not going to run like Cam did, but I'm just all in.
They really made up for it with Def because, you know, like, having Cobb in there, too.
Yeah.
Like, Cobb was pretty good last year.
They had nothing out of the slot. They had to play Kenny Stills out of the slot a lot last year, and that's just not – that's not his position. And, like I said, Kiki Cutie was terrible. Probably why Darren Fells had 7 touchdowns last year. Like, he's got nothing out of the middle of the field. Hopkins was like an underneath guy for the most of the season. He wasn't really used deep down the field. So, like I said, if you just run those guys all deep and Deshaun Watson doesn't have anybody open, like, he'll just take off. And I think it's going to happen a lot this year.
I think the overall set of his weapons is way better when you just look at it on paper, even versus Kyler. I think that he's got – it's the full complement. Like, he's got red zone weapons. Like, he's got big body tight ends that he can throw in, like, and Darren Fells could have 6-7 touchdowns this year. He's also got other ancillary weapons. Just the full complement all the way down the depth chart puts him firmly over Kyler. I think I'm a little bit higher on Dak than at least what we've discussed so far, because I think that we haven't seen Dak, like, stack just – ridiculous touchdown numbers, at least to this point. Now, does Zeke put a cap on that just based off of what he gets on the ground and he's going to have, you know, his double-digit scores or around there is a fair argument to make. But I also think that we could see just a ridiculous explosion by Dak this year as well to vault him near or in this tier. I'm curious your thoughts on that because – I mean, Dak over the last 3 years, 28, 28, and then even last year, he only scored, I mean, I say only, but 33 total touchdowns. The rushing scores went down. I think that a full year of Kellen Moore not having Jason Garrett in his back pocket, like, screwing with the play calls, and because you saw a variance in this offense last year, like, they came out just tossing the rock, and they kept on doing that at various points of the year when they got down and such. But I think Jason Garrett factored into some of the offense throughout the year that's not talked about enough. And if McCarthy is really going to let just like back off and say, okay, Kellen Moore, you do your thing, baby. Like, let's push it. Let's go. The offense is yours. I think that there's still some more ceiling for Dak that we haven't seen yet, but I'm curious your thoughts on this.
Yeah. I mean, I don't have a single bad thing to say about Dak Prescott. I bet him to win MVP.
Yeah. You're a big Cowboys fan this year because of that.
I think the weapons are sick. You know,
when the efficiency goes up too, like you're losing dad runner Jason Witten, you're losing Randall Cobb. We have a more efficient explosive weapon that's going to see the slot in CeeDee Lamb. If Jarwin is making better plays or more efficient plays than Witten was, I just think there's more of a ceiling that Dak can access this year that we still haven't seen to this point.
But the thing with Dak, like the only reason that he's not higher is just because he doesn't, like, even though he runs for touchdowns, he actually doesn't run for that many yards.
Yeah, that's, yep. He had 20% of their carries from inside the five last year. It was a top five number among quarterbacks. And the last 2 years, he's averaging over one red zone rushing attempt per game. So they have a lot of options. Like, they've run a lot of option plays down there. If I told you right now that Russell Wilson would finish top 10, I'll say he's 10th in pass attempts this year, where would he be? Because, my goodness, you want to talk about maybe the most efficient passer we've ever seen.
I mean, he'd be up there, but it's never going to happen.
It's never going to happen for some reason.
I mean, I get the conversation point, but as long as Carroll and Shoddy are up there, it's never going to happen. So, I mean, to me, it's a dead issue because as much as people want to talk about it and they want to craft narratives and how bad the defense is and things of that nature, it still doesn't matter. Like, they're bottom of the league in neutral script passing rates. And I don't see that changing, but I do think it's something to mention here.
The thing, I mean, it's just like, he's just so safe because you know that Russ has been efficient now for so long that that's just who he is. Mm-hmm. So if they ever did throw more, he'd be the nuts. And, like, his, even though his overall finish may be, like, you know, QB8 or QB10 or something like that, he's going to have weeks where he's QB1. And he's going to have weeks
where he's
going to
come in the second half where he's the number one quarterback for, like, 4 weeks. He just does it every year.
Right. So, like, you know, I think pretty much everyone is the board team, let Russ cook. And, you know, sometimes he's going to because that's the only option that they have. And when those games happen, because of the, you know, especially now that they have, I think, a pretty deep group of weapons, maybe this is the year, you know, you never know. And they kind of like beat around the bush. Like, I feel like every time they ask Pete Carroll, he's like, yeah, you know, like we, you know, Russ is really good. But, you know, this is kind of our identity, et cetera. But
I really don't like their defense minus, like, three play. Like, their pass rush was bottom three. Like, they were such a bad pass rush last year, and they don't have Clowney now. There's an outside shot that their defense is, like, pretty bad. But still, like, it's just safe production every week from Russ. It's just, does he have the upside of those, the Dax and Watsons and Murrays, if he's not going to throw, you know, there's, you're going to get more games where he has less than 30 pass attempts than he has more than 30 pass attempts, which sucks.
I'm totally with all of that. So moving over to the aging, the old, the Geritol crew, the guys that are basically have 1 foot on the field, 1 foot in the nursing home. So you got like Tom Brady. We could add Matt Ryan into this because he's getting like quietly getting up in years. Breeze, Big Ben, Aaron Rodgers, the much maligned. Anthony, where are you at on this crew? Any favorites? Any surprises?
I mean, first of all, like, imagine liking Aaron Rodgers in fantasy.
Yeah, we're
it's a complete, we can, it's a complete
we,
non-star.
We had to put him in the tier because he falls into that line, but we talked about it. We did a bust podcast. Aaron Rodgers was my bust. Like, just, no, don't.
He's literally my, like, QB25 projected right now. Like, I'm just
and
never.
It's not even because of him, either. That's what sucks. Like, it's not even because of him.
No, it's not. It's 100% not. But, like, Brady, to me, in terms of raw points, is clearly the guy. You know, the Bucs last year produced the QB5 in points per game in FFPC formats. As you know, that was Jameis Winston, and he could not even find a job this offseason. You know, he settled for a $1.1 million contract with the Saints. Do I think that Jameis is better than that? Probably. But you know, it's very possible that he's just a bad quarterback that was propped up by elite weapons.
And his own downfall.
Right. Now you get Brady in there. The weapons have somehow gotten better because they added Gronk. You know, Keyshawn Vaughn is a better receiving running back than they've had. If you're on Team Tyler Johnson, you probably believe that that's a little bit of an upgrade somewhere. So, I mean, it's about as good of a situation as you could get for a quarterback. And, you know, as the founding member of Team Weapons Matter, you know, I have Brady at QB5 right now in raw projection.
Ooh.
And I probably wouldn't rank him any lower than like QB7 or QB8. You know, there's obviously some risk because he's older and it's possible, I guess, that he is kind of washed out. But, like, honestly, I think you could put Gardner Minshew in this offense and he'd be a QB1. So, like, I really don't have any reservations.
Watch it. Don't talk bad about Gardner.
Well, okay, so pick a quarterback you don't think is very good. I don't care.
Good. I think it's a really good point, for at least for me. Like, Brady versus Matt Ryan, because I find myself really high on Matt Ryan. Where are you at on Matt Ryan right now? Because I'm really... I love him for this year.
He's fine. I mean, he's like a safe QB1.
Yeah, that's... Dude, so I have Matt Ryan one spot ahead of Brady, and it's just because I know what I'm getting from Matt Ryan. Brady, we should imagine he's going to be more than you know, average. He's going to be pretty good in this offense, but Matt Ryan's thrown for at least 4,000 yards in each of his last 9 seasons, and he's averaging 596 attempts during that span. Just, we know this dirt cutter offense is going to be pass happy. During his time with the Falcons as a coordinator, as a play caller, 7th, 1st, 3rd, and 1st in passing play percentage, and he gets to sort of the best receiver in the NFL.
Ryan is in for some touchdown regression, too. Like, if you look back over the last few years, his second year with offensive coordinators, like, settling firmly into a system, and I know Cutter was there before, but if you just look over the last few coordinators he had, first year with Cutter, Shanahan, and Sarkisian,
big yikes.
He had like 3.4 to 3.8 touchdown percentages. Now, in the second year, we didn't see this happen when Cutter was in town the first go-around because Julio, Roddy White, they had injury concerns. They were both extremely limited that year. But the other coordinators, Ryan saw touchdown percentage bumps to 5.8 and 7.1. Now, I'm not going to say that he's going to hit above 7 this year, but with the weapons he still has there, I mean, we still have Julio. We still have Ridley. Everybody is talking about Ridley ascending. I'm firmly on that train. Like, I think Ryan is going to probably hit somewhere above, and this people might firmly disagree with me, but I think that he's going to hit somewhere in the 6% range, and you marry that with the volume he's going to see, and I think that there's top 5 ceiling up in here. But
especially if Gurley doesn't, like, pan out or gets hurt, like, they're going to be even more pass-heavy, and they've been so pass-heavy in the red zone. Like, I don't know.
You need that, Adam. Like, I'm firmly on team, like, Gurley is dust. So I'm already baking all of that into where I sit. But that's why I think it's an interesting conversation, because a lot of the things that Anthony's laying out for Brady, I like Ryan to get very, very close. Like, I think that they're going to battle it out for probably the QB5 spot this year, depending on how his touchdowns shake out. But we talked about Minshew very briefly. Over to the guys that are going to run that are, depending on where you're at, and I don't want to just be smirched because Adam's going to come at me on this one and say that Josh Allen is a lower tier right now, but as far as the guys that are going to access their legs as part of their value, so Josh Allen, even if we throw dimes in here, Newton, Minshew, Tyrod, on all these different running quarterbacks, Anthony, where do you sit on a lot of these different guys, and are you particularly higher or lower on any of these?
I mean, I think it is pretty disrespectful to Josh Allen to have him. Let's just be real, you know?
Yeah, bro, you got to remember, Miko, every quarterback in the NFL has the opportunity and ability to get better as a passer, except for Josh Allen. He's just
funny about all of this is that Adam made the outline. Adam put him in this tier, okay? So he's his own dude.
I kept him out of tier 2 because I don't have him in tier 2, and then he's obviously not in the old and aging crew, so he kind of just made this tier. But let's get it out of the way. He's clearly way ahead of all these guys. Hey, it's not even remotely close.
He's
not even remotely close. He's way above these guys. I just didn't have him in tier 2 with those guys we talked about, and he's not
old
and aging. It's 100%
on
me.
You.
So let's throw Josh Allen out of there. Daniel Jones, Cam, Gardner Minshew. And we talked about this earlier, Amico, off the pod, but, like, the Chargers clearly have weapons, but nobody really cares about Tyrod. Like, he's going to give you that floor, and I'm firmly a believer that Justin Herbert's not playing this year unless Tyrod gets hurt, because I think the Chargers are good enough to where Herbert doesn't have to play, and Anthony Lynn's still the head coach who spent his time in Buffalo with Tyrod as a quarterback. So this thing that, like, people think is, okay, Tyrod's going to start a couple games, like, and Herbert's coming in, I don't necessarily agree.
Yeah, it's the only thing that's tough, like you mentioned, is that playing time projection. But if you're just kind of and we haven't seen him start like a huge volume of games over the last couple of years, so there is like some built-in variance probably into like where his true skill level is right now. But if you just kind of took the stuff that he's done as a starter in the past and put it into this offense with these weapons, yeah, you're gonna end up with a guy that's either a QB1 or pretty darn close. So like the way that I project teams and players is I don't project any injuries. So like for the quarterbacks, I only project one starter. Like I don't try to guess on the games because I just really want to get a good view of the offense. And yeah. You know, like Tyrod, like if you just project every current starter for 16 games, like Tyrod comes out as my QB11.
Yeah, he was QB 16, 16, and 7 in his 3 years in Buffalo. Like, but most people are ranking him as like quarterback 25. Like you're probably not drafting him in a regular
redraft.
But I
think that's where it comes into it. I think that a lot of people are not projecting him to start the entire season. That's why he gets lowered, and he's not getting talked about enough because at least if you look at a lot of different median projections, a lot of people are like looking at the schedule and oh dear God in heaven. There's so many people out there, like, we've gone so heavy into schedule analysis.
I don't get it. I hate it.
Summer, it's crazy. Like, people are like, oh, they're the opening schedule for... I'm like...
They're talking about that for the Giants. Like, the Giants have a tough schedule.
We're in July.
And we're in...
Some of these defenses, we don't even know
yet. Dude, we're in COVID. We're in COVID situation, too. Like, dudes can get COVID, and then all of a sudden, the Bears defense is missing three dudes. Like... The Bear, like, I use this example all the time. People talk about schedule. The Bears defense, without Akeem Hicks last year, they were really bad against the run. But and if you talked about avoiding players against the Bears, or in the beginning of the season because they played the Bears, like, I just think schedule analysis is, like, probably the last thing I even think about when looking at players or anything. But yeah, it's totally off tangent. It bothers me. I don't get it.
But in all of this, I think that's the only reason you don't hear Tyrod talked about more. Like, people are not discussing him because the usual narrative floating out there is that, okay, he's not going to start more than maybe 5 or 6 games. Because past that, he is the bargain basement QB1 that you can get if people are looking for the late Konami guys. He's the guy that nobody wants. The guy that, like, we're talking about in a lot of various avenues, everybody's on Minshew. A lot of different people like Daniel Jones. Tyrod's not being talked about because people don't think he's going to start all season. And that's really, I think, a lot of the crux of it, though.
525 rushing yards on average during his 3 seasons in Buffalo on about 95 attempts. You think Anthony Lynn's going to be like, yo, Tyrod, don't run? I don't think so. Dude, he was throwing to Kelvin Benjamin, who was complete dust. Andre Holmes was the Bills' number 2 receiver for a lot of that season. Zay Jones and Charles Clay. Like, that was his... group of Pat. He had Watkins the 1 year where Watkins was really good, but like this is clearly the best system and offense he's been in. You have Eckler, you have Keenan Allen, you have Hunter Henry, Mike Williams. Like if there was one quarterback outside the consensus, like top 15, that could be a top 12 guy, and it wouldn't surprise me, probably be Tyrod. Like just because we've seen it in a worse offense.
Well, and even if you want to talk about Cleveland, this is still overall at. What, can we say better pass catchers than even what he saw when he was with the Browns? Because what do they have, Landry, maybe Njoku?
It was Landry and Njoku, and they didn't even have Nick Chubb back then because that was Carlos Hyde. It was a starter still, right? So, yeah, I forgot he was on Cleveland, to be honest, because he played, like, the first 2 games and then got concussed and Baker came in. That was that Jets game on Monday night. I've been taking him in a lot of Superflex drafts, and I just pair him with Justin Herbert. That's what I've been doing in all of them. Just in case, because you can get them both like at the end. So what? Just pair them.
Absolutely.
What do you think about the other guys, though, Miko? You have Daniel Jones, who I'm definitely in on. Gardner Minshew, who I'm clearly in on. And we haven't really talked about Cam on this podcast because the news broke like days after we first recorded this first episode, so we didn't, you know, we kind of, it was well behind in the news cycle. But yeah, I think Cam's obviously got the upside to be a top 10 guy if he's Cam again, because if he's healthy, Cam is not a bad quarterback. I don't know what people are thinking.
I mean, I don't even think that Daniel Jones is in the Cam Newton class. Like, I have Daniel Jones pretty low, because I don't think that he's going to be good enough as a passer. Like, the Giants don't really have good enough weapons. You know, like, they have a lot of guys that, I guess maybe the best way to say that is they have a lot of guys that do the same thing.
That's, so when you're, yeah, that's the problem.
Him out, yeah, like, when you're projecting him out, like, it's hard to imagine him having, like, decent efficiency, because we're not even sure if he's any good yet. But then also, like, the guys he's throwing to aren't guys that are going to make, you know, good plays for him or big plays for him. And he also is, like, just, like, a turnover machine, which I don't even include in the projections, and he still hasn't come out that high.
He was the quarterback 5, I think, in his starts, like, without leaving. He also had some really soft matchup. Like, there was that Tampa Bay game. And that's a good point you mentioned about all their guys kind of doing the same thing, because Sterling Shepard and Golden Tate really don't fit well, because Shepard, when they were both healthy, Shepard got moved out wide, like, on 65% of his snaps. And so far in his NFL career, he's been significantly worse on a per-target basis when he's out wide. Slayton's obviously exciting, but you also have to add the fact that none of these guys were healthy together last year. They didn't play one game together. And while you would expect them to be healthy, like, Evan Engram and Sterling Shepard have been just injured throughout their career. So I like Daniel Jones, but the Cam signing put a wrench in it, because I feel like Cam could easily be better, and probably should be, if he's Cam, easily be better than all these guys.
I'm jacked up for Cam this year, man. I mean, been watching all the videos.
He is, like, very motivated, and
I'm feeling the hype,
bro. So I don't know if
Patriots know what they're doing.
Debro, I wasn't really in contact with Debro when Cam was, you know, dominating the league, but Cam's one of my favorite players ever. So the fact that he went to New England is really tilting, because I want to root for him every week, but I kind of can't. So it's hurtful.
I'm really big on Cam this year, and I understand people want to talk about, like, all the different things, but when I broke down the Patriots, looking at how Cam can fit into this offense, it is so sneaky good. And I understand that the system is intricate and stuff like that, but, like, the last time we saw a somewhat healthy Cam, and they utilized heavy play action with Norv in 2018, Cam was so freaking good. Like, his accuracy numbers, his completion percentages just went up across the board. He was top of the league, or near it, in play action completion percentages, his overall completion percentages, and they run a ton of play action in New England. And the last time that we saw a Brady-less offense, so, like, if you go back to, like, Castle and different Jacoby variations, I think Garoppolo and Jacoby are even bad narratives, or bad at least data points to look at. Garoppolo is fine, but he got hurt. You got such a small sample. Mm-hmm. Jacoby was a freaking rookie that year, so that really is not a good test on, like, what this could look like versus Cam. And anybody trying to fit this offense and McDaniels and what they did with Tebow, get out of here, man. Like, Cam is immensely, like, a different stratosphere, area code, parking lot, better as a passer than Tim Tebow. Like, they're not even close to comparable.
Sure, and, but it does give you, though, like, some insight into how McDaniels may use him as a runner, though, and that gives you some inspiration.
No, and I like that. But the thing that I think the volume narrative on Cam in New England is, I think there's more variation, and this can still be somewhat of a high passing offense, because when you look back to the Castle days, they were still 12th. They ran, like, the pace was fast. Cam can do that. I think that this could still be a high volume passing offense, a little bit more than probably consensus. I don't know where you stand on that, Anthony, but I think Cam, for me, is going to be a locked-in QB1 and provided health, and we see that before the season in any small stretch. There's so many different factors versus, I think, with pace, I think with the personnel that is still there, because even if you want to compare it to a lot of his different Carolina years, these weapons, there's a multifaceted set that can still play up. I think that We still haven't seen anything close to the best out of N'Keal Harry. We don't know what his ceiling is, considering he basically redshirted last year. And for the other weapons in this offense, I just think that this is a better system fit than it may look like on paper, or at least like on the surface.
I don't love the weapons, but I definitely see the upside. Like, I think that, like, I think Harry's the guy that I like the most. I'm pretty down on Edelman. But, like, Cam seems like the guy that can get the most out of this group just because he's kind of shown, like, I people probably don't like this comparison, but I keep going back to Kelvin Benjamin because, like, Harry, I'm not saying, like, Harry's bad, but I'm just saying that Harry is, like, that kind of player in the sense that, like, you're going to throw him contested balls.
They've always surrounded Cam with just big dudes, right? It was Kelvin. It was right. It was Funchess. It was the tight right. ends. So that's kind of how they've – and maybe it's to kind of, you know, mask some of the accuracy issues he has had. Just give him somebody that can kind of make contested catches. But there was also the narrative that he wasn't going to throw the ball to McCaffrey in McCaffrey's rookie year. And then, like, they still have James White. Like, James White's a really good player. I don't know. I just hate that he's with New England. We also have to discuss that he... what if he doesn't win the start? I'm just kidding. He's winning the starting job. Get that narrative out of here.
I can't even. Like, healthy Cam, even like... Anthony, what did you throw out there? Like, even if Cam has, what, one leg, he's still going to get the starting job?
He could have no legs. I mean, he could literally have zero legs.
Look! Just a flesh wound. Look, stop that! Chicken! Chicken! Look, I'll have your leg! Right, I'll do you for that!
You what?
Come here! I'm invincible! How about you? Come on, then! All right, we'll call it a draw.
Like, what evidence do we have that Jarrett Stidham is better than his draft position would suggest? Like, you don't have any evidence of that.
I don't disagree at all. So before we get you out of here, Anthony, who do you think, if you're going to pick, like, one or two guys that you're going to see, like, that are your favorites that are going to end up on a lot of your squads this year, who are those two different quarterbacks? You can go, obviously, really robust, like you've been doing in Superflex, or give us a guy we haven't talked about yet.
For me, I mean, the guy that I'm going to probably have the most of this year, and we didn't talk about him in the old and aging crew.
Yes, but, I didn't know where you're going. Yes.
Big Ben, man.
Nope, I mean, it's not where you're going. All right,
where did you think I was going?
I thought you were going Stafford.
Oh, never. I just.
What do you mean never?
Not in fantasy.
Why not?
Because people already like him. Like, he's not really a discount.
I did bring up Big Ben in the underrated episode yesterday.
Well, I just think that he's the most egregiously priced quarterback of the summer. Like, he's the guy where, to me, when you're in, like, the 12th or 14th round of a best ball, and you're like, you know, who's the guy, who's the QB I can draft in this range that could be a top 10 quarterback? The answer is Ben Roethlisberger. I mean, it's really just all about the pass volume. Randy Fitchner. It's pretty much just let him run the whole show. In his time as the OC, Ben's averaging 42.5 pass attempts per game between 2018 and that first game of 2019 before he got hurt. So, you know, anytime you have outrageous pass volume like that, I think you're in good position to score. Obviously, we don't have a ton of information about how Ben is feeling. All the reports are positive, but you'd expect that. To me, if Ben is 90%, they're probably going to throw again a ton because, I mean, they're still not really that great of a team. Obviously, the defense was really good last year, but you'd expect that to regress a little bit just because defense is kind of hard to project. But they want to throw. And I think that when you look at the weapons that they have, you know, with Juju and, you know, they're double stacked at tight end. They have Deontay Johnson, who everybody loves, my boy James Washington. They just drafted Chase Claypool. Like, they look like a passing offense.
Dude, I'm hyped. I'm hyped that you brought up Big Ben because I paired him with Juju and SFB.
Oh, it's just a nuts play. Because to be QB 20 in the FFPC right now is
wow. I didn't realize he was that low. And I talked about him on the pod yesterday. I didn't realize he was that low. Wow.
I think.
So who's going over him? Like, dudes like Goff.
Yeah, I mean, well, Goff, I don't really have a huge issue.
I don't either. But like,
but the guys that are going between, but like, it's Daniel Jones, Cam Baker, Tyrod, Joe Burrow, Goff, and then Ben, and then right after Ben is Nick Foles.
My guy's going to be the poster boy this entire episode. Deshaun Watson, man. I'm just going to keep letting people watch him fall and being scared of DeAndre Hopkins not being there. And they're going to take Kyler, and they're going to take Russell Wilson. Some people are going to take Josh Allen. And I'm just going to be like, all right, he's going to run for 500 yards. He's going to throw a lot as well. And the, like we talked about, the overall weapons as a whole are better than they were last year, and they make more sense. And, oh, by the way, he's probably, I mean, you could probably argue he's the third best quarterback in the NFL, right? Maybe, like, you could argue he's better than Lamar Jackson.
I would argue he's probably, like, I mean, he's very soundly in the top five, I think.
Yeah, and he's going to go at a major discount this year, and there's so much upside there.
Absolutely, man. Well, look, that was amazing insight from Anthony on this episode. I mean, we destroyed the quarterback position, ran through all different facets, I mean, strategy, what have you. So I want to thank Anthony again for stopping by the pod today, sharing some amazing insight. Again, follow him on Twitter at Amixta and check out all of his amazing analytical dives on fadethenoise.com. Adam and I are going to be back next week with three more scorching episodes as we march towards fantasy draft season. For Fade the Chalk, we are out.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Fade the Chalk with Derek and Adam. Make sure to follow your hosts and the podcast on Twitter at @DBRO_FFB, at @APPfeiffer24, and at @ChalkFade. Smash that subscribe button so you don't miss an episode.